Welcome, everyone. So my name's Ashish, and I have the pleasure of introducing our concurrent speaker to you today. So Genevieve Hayes is going to be sharing her advice with you today on actuaries thinking about making the move into the world of analytics and data science. Before she starts, just a little bit about Genevieve. So Genevieve is an actuary. She holds a PhD in statistics from the ANU, and she's built her career on working in the space where those two qualifications overlap, that being stats and actuarial. She's had roles in consulting as a university lecturer and in the government sector, and she currently leads the analytics and actuarial team at the Victorian Managed Insurance Authority, VMIA, where she's involved in implementing a 5-year strategy to develop VMIA's internal analytics capability. She's also got a keen interest in data science, and when Genevieve's not at work, she spends most of her time, I understand, working towards a Master's of Computer Science, particularly with a focus on machine learning, which is obviously becoming increasingly topical in the industry, but also for our profession. And she's currently also, on top of all of that, her day job, her Master's, and her personal life, she's also currently undertaking a distance course. She's doing that via a distance course from the Georgia Institute of Technology. So used to dealing with lots of challenges and juggling multiple balls. So Genevieve's going to come and present to you now, and I'll hand over to her.
Hi. Okay, well, the field of analytics comprises a lot of different roles. These range from traditional business intelligence type roles that focus on data extraction and historical reporting to roles that involve the use of advanced analytical techniques such as statisticians and data scientists. However, thanks to that infamous article that appeared in the Harvard Business Review back in 2012 that labelled data scientist as the sexiest job of the 21st century, these days, whenever people are talking about making the move into data analytics, what they're usually talking about is moving into a data scientist type role. And from my recent experience in recruiting a data scientist for my own team at VMIA, I'm well aware that many actuaries are keenly interested in moving into this area. I've also seen some of the shortcomings in the actuarial skill set that can lead to actuaries missing the mark when it comes to meeting the selection criteria for data scientist positions. So, as a result, in this presentation, I aim to serve the dual purpose of providing an overview of the global analytics landscape for those of you who might not be familiar with it, and also to provide practical advice to actuaries who are interested in making the move into data analytics so that they can make that transition as smoothly as possible. So, what does it mean to be a data scientist, and how does that differ from being an actuary? Well, there are actually quite a lot of similarities between the actuarial and data scientist skill sets. Both actuaries and data scientists are highly skilled in statistics or mathematics. They both possess strong domain or business knowledge in the industry in which they work, and they're both typically experts in communicating technical information to a non-technical audience. However, actuaries, on the one hand, actuarial science tends to be a combination of statistics and finance or economics, with that statistics tending to focus on techniques that are designed for quantifying risk, for example, valuation or pricing techniques. Whereas on the other hand, data science could be seen as being more the overlap between statistics and computer science. So data scientists are typically experts in multiple programming languages and in machine learning techniques. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, machine learning is typically described as a set of techniques for extracting information from data. So these might involve predicting the value of a target variable or classifying a target variable given a set of explanatory variables. So as is the case with linear regression or decision trees, or identifying patterns or clusters in data, as is the case with k-means clustering. Another difference between actuarial science and data science is that whereas actuarial science as a profession has been around for quite some time now, data science has really only emerged as a profession since the turn of the 21st century. And this is actually quite interesting because the two disciplines that form the foundation of data science, statistics and computer science, have actually been around for pretty much as long as actuarial science has been around. In the case of statistics, I would consider the greatest discovery in the field of statistics to be the normal distribution. The normal distribution was first introduced in a paper published by Gauss back in the early 19th century. And the foundations of theoretical computer science, which were laid out by Alan Turing, they were first published in a paper back in 1936. So even though computers weren't really around back then, Alan Turing was able to come up with these foundations of theoretical computer science based on how he solved mathematical problems in his head. And it turned out that he was right, and they still hold true today. However, data science has really only emerged in the last decade or so because it's only really been in that time that we've had access to the data and computing power necessary for data-driven decision-making to flourish. And since then, however, data science has really taken off as a profession, and data analytics professionals have gone from being backroom nerds to being the must-have hire of organisations big and small. And who are these people who are suddenly hiring data scientists? Well, this slide just illustrates a couple of them. We have tech companies, mining companies, presidential campaigns, supermarkets, sporting organisations, amusement parks. A better question might be, who isn't hiring data scientists? And unfortunately, the answer to that question is that man. But let's not think about that too much for the time being. Thinking about the previous slide, it's no real surprise that data science is being utilised by tech companies such as Google and Amazon. Silicon Valley is really where data science all began. Google was one of the first companies to really make use of data science. Back when it was a startup, the two founders of Google, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, their philosophy was that any decisions that had to be made should be backed by scientific evidence. And clearly this has worked very well for Google, and it's something that other tech companies then picked up from them. Some of you may have heard of the 41 Shades of Blue incident at Google. Anyone? Okay, that's great because it gives me an excuse to tell that one. This was back in the days of Marissa Mayer when she was working at Google before she became CEO of Yahoo. And infamously, she was working on the design for a particular toolbar, and she insisted that the designer scientifically test the 41 different shades of blue that they were considering for that particular toolbar in order to work out which one had the highest click-through rate. Needless to say, the designer quit shortly after that. But the remarkable thing isn't that these tech companies are using data science. What's remarkable is that organisations that have not traditionally been thought of as tech-savvy are now finally realising the importance of data analytics. So Disneyland is using analytics to personalise the Disney experience to their guests. If you go to a Disney theme park, you'll get one of those magic bracelets which collects data on you using RFIDs. And they use that to send particular characters your way so that you're seeing unique things as you go around Disneyland. A-B testing techniques are being used in the design of websites for political candidates in order to maximise the number of people who donate to those campaigns. Hillary Clinton had her own personal data science team for her presidential campaign. Sporting teams such as the NBA are using analytics to work out the probability of players scoring from different points on the playing field or court and using that to optimise play. Governments are now setting up data analytics and data science teams that make use of open data laws to facilitate whole of government data sharing and data analysis. In early 2015, President Obama appointed DJ Patel as the White House's first chief data scientist. And closer to home, the governments of New South Wales and Victoria are both in the process of setting up whole of state government data science teams. Where I work at VMAA, which is the Victorian state government insurer, are responsible for providing insurance and risk management advice to Victorian state government entities. We're in the process of building our own internal data analytics capabilities. We already have an established actuarial and business intelligence team, but now we're expanding into advanced analytics, and we've recently hired our own data scientist in order to do that. Our data scientist, Lisa, started in September, and one of her main tasks is now looking at our data and the data of our clients in order to try and identify early warning signals for claims events or systemic causes of claims so that we can use that as the basis of risk management initiatives and try and reduce the cost of claims and, in turn, client premiums. So these are just a few examples of how analytics can be used in businesses and other organisations. And the number of examples is just going to grow in the coming years as more and more businesses realise the benefits of analytics. This means that demand for people with the data science skill set, which already outstrips supply, is only going to continue to grow. The good news for actuaries is that, as mentioned previously, there are significant overlaps between the data science and actuarial skill sets. So that means that for actuaries who are interested in going into data analytics, that you're probably better placed than people in other quantitative disciplines in order to make the move in this direction. The bad news for actuaries is that the areas in which the data science skill set diverges from the actuarial skill set tend to form some of the key selection criteria for data science positions. So if you're interested in making the move into analytics, just having actuarial qualifications or experience probably isn't going to be enough to get you a job in that area. So if being an actuary isn't enough, what does it take to get a job as a data scientist? Well, the exact skill and experience requirements for data scientist positions vary from role to role and industry to industry, depending on the sorts of data that your employer wants you to analyse. Many people typically associate big data with data science experience. But the fact is, not every employer has access to big data. So if someone doesn't have access to big data, then they're not going to really care if the people they're hiring can work with that or not. However, if you go on a website such as seek.com and have a look at the job ads for data scientist positions, then you'll find there are certain skill requirements that keep on coming up again and again in the job ads for data scientist positions. And these are the ones that I've identified from looking at those job descriptions. So people who are hiring data scientists typically want tertiary qualifications in a quantitative discipline, for example, maths, stats, computer science, engineering, actuarial, whatever. And they often specify that those should be at a master's or PhD level. Unlike with actuarial studies, where we have professional actuarial qualifications, at the moment there is no professional data scientist qualification. Now, I'm sure that'll change in the not too distant future, but until that happens, master's or PhD in a quantitative discipline has sort of become the de facto qualification for being a data scientist. Programming experience in a particular in one or more languages, with the four big data science programming languages being SAS, Python, R, and SQL. Experience in applying statistical data analysis techniques, such as predictive modelling and machine learning. Experience in data exploration, manipulation, and visualisation. Strong written and verbal communication skills, including experience in communicating technical concepts to a non-technical audience, and the inevitable experience working in a similar role or industry. Now, as actuaries, we typically all have tertiary qualifications in a quantitative discipline, although these might not necessarily be at a postgraduate level. And we're all pretty good at communicating technical concepts to a non-technical audience. I know that in all of the jobs that I've had, that's something I've pretty much had to do on a daily basis. However, the things that we as actuaries aren't so great at is programming languages. There are many actuaries who can get by their whole careers without using anything more complicated than Excel. Non-actuarial statistical techniques. So all of us are probably pretty good at using the valuation and pricing techniques, but how many of us use support vector machines on a daily basis? Data visualization techniques. We all know how to create graphs using Microsoft Excel, but I know that from what I've experienced of the actuarial education process, I don't think anyone's ever sat down and explained to me the principles of good data visualization. And that can really make a difference when it comes to effectively communicating information in a visual way. And, of course, data science experience. So what can be done to bridge these skill and experience gaps? Well, fortunately, the first three of these items can be acquired via a number of different avenues. The proviso being that you have to be prepared to put in the time and effort needed in order to learn these things. There is no magic bullet whereby you can learn these things in the space of a weekend or a week or so. If you're so inclined, as a result of the sudden boom in demand for data scientists, data science postgraduate programs are popping up at universities all over the place. Pretty much every major university now has either a data science or data analytics master's or graduate diploma program on offer. And, of course, there are also the more traditional statistics and computer science master's programs. If that's the sort of thing that you're interested in, then my recommendation is, before you sign up for anything, take a good look at the courses that are being offered as part of the program. One thing that I've noticed from looking at the course lists for some of these programs is that what a number of universities have done is just take their old statistics degree that they've been offering for the past 20 plus years and just rebrand it as a data science degree. And what you'd find if you'd actually done one of those is that you could potentially end up getting to the end of it and finding out that you are missing out on many of the computer science aspects of data science. If doing a master's seems like too big a commitment, then there are also a lot of online resources and MOOCs, so massive open online courses that you can also use to teach yourself these skills, although bearing in mind that you're probably not going to learn them to the same level as if you were to undertake a university program. The Actuaries Institute lists several resources on their website, but here are several other resources that I'm aware of, either through my own use or that have been recommended to me by people I know. As an aside, I've previously been asked by people trying to get into data analytics whether they should list MOOCs on their resume. There are differing opinions on this, but my view is that you should because they show that you're prepared to put in the time and effort needed to learn data analytics. So that's a demonstrated interest in the topic, as opposed to one of the people who applies for every single job that's being offered on Seek that bears a vague resemblance to their qualifications. The proviso being that if, say, you did the Stanford University Machine Learning MOOC, don't try and pretend that you've studied machine learning at Stanford University. I have seen that on resumes, and the consequence was that it did a lot of damage to the credibility of that applicant. It's something that I picked up, and I'm sure it's something that other potential employers would pick up. With regard to data science experience, that brings us to the old catch-22 situation whereby in order to get data science experience, you need to have a job in data science, except in order to get the job in data science, you need to have data science experience. Except that isn't quite true. As actuaries, many of us are actually very well placed to get experience in using data science techniques in our current job. The trick is to look for ways in which you can apply the data science skills that you've learnt through online or university studies or whatever to the tasks that you've been assigned at work. So to give an example of that, recently I had to do some data exploration work in my job. Now, rather than using SAS or Excel for that work, which is what I would have used in the past, I used R to complete that work. There's no problem in getting R installed on my computer at work because it's a free piece of software. And even though I'm a much stronger programmer in SAS than in R, by forcing myself to do that work in R, I was able to develop my skills as an R programmer. I also, in doing that piece of work, tried to apply as many of the statistical techniques that I've learnt in my studies in order to make that work as solid and thorough as possible. And finally, when I was writing up the final presentation resulting from that work, I tried to use some of the data visualisation skills that I'd learnt in order to create the graphs that formed the basis for that presentation. Now, this might not seem like much, but any analytical experience is better than no experience, and that might just be enough to give you the edge necessary in order to land your dream job. Which brings me to the final point that I'd like to address, which is, does moving into data science necessarily mean abandoning your actuarial roots? The answer to this question really depends on what you want to do in the field of data analytics. If you want to go and work for Google or on a political campaign, then yes, you're probably going to be moving quite a bit away from the traditional role of a general insurance actuary. However, many traditional employers of actuaries are now establishing their own analytical functionalities, and in some cases separate from their existing actuarial teams, and in other cases as cross-functional analytics and actuarial teams, where the members of that team are assigned to different tasks depending on the organisation's needs. And such roles could potentially provide a best of both worlds type scenario for actuaries who want to work in an analytics role but still want to maintain contact with the actuarial community. I'm actually a firm believer in the benefits of cross-functional actuarial and analytics teams. My own team at VMIA is a cross-functional team that comprises three actuaries or actuarial analysts, two SAS programmers and a data scientist, in addition to myself. And I think that this results in better outcomes for VMIA than if we had a team made up of, say, six actuaries. So many of you might have heard about the difficulties of hiring people in the field of data science, or the difficulties in hiring unicorns, people who can do everything. Now, I'm sure some of these people do exist, but for a government employer that's on a budget to hire six people who can do everything is basically impossible. However, my team as a whole can do pretty much everything that I can throw at them. It's just a matter of assigning the correct combination of skills to a particular task. If I need someone who's strong in actuarial techniques and SAS programming, I'll assign one of my SAS programmers and one of the actuaries to the task. Or I've also had my data scientist and actuaries working together so that my data scientist can supplement the actuary's technical skills and allow them to do more than they would be able to do otherwise. And the other advantage, of course, being that all the people in my team are able to learn from each other and broaden their own skill sets. The other day I saw my data scientist working with my graduate actuary in order to teach him the basics of VBA programming. The success of this model at VMIA has led me to believe that cross-functional analytics and actuarial teams are something that could potentially benefit many other organisations that currently employ actuaries. So, in summary, the field of data analytics has exploded in the last decade or so and is only going to get bigger going forward. With the younger generation of actuaries showing an increasing interest in learning analytical techniques, and data science concepts such as machine learning likely to make it into future updates of the international actuarial syllabus, it seems inevitable that the overlap between data science and actuarial science will only increase in future years until actuaries and data scientists become virtually indistinguishable. Until then, however, whether you're an actuary wanting to move into the field of data analytics or one who is quite content continuing working in a traditional actuarial role, there's a lot of benefit that can be had now from combining the actuarial and data science skill sets, either at an individual level or a team level. Hopefully this presentation has provided you with some helpful advice on how you can go about doing that.
Thanks, Genevieve. I think we can all agree that was a really interesting and timely session for the profession, given given, I guess, in a lot of ways, data science is a bit of a threat to us, but it's also, I think, as Genevieve points out, it's a huge opportunity for us to broaden our skill set and broaden our reach across different industries. So with that, we'll turn over to questions. Now, there's two ways you can submit your questions. You can either come up to that mic right there in the middle and deliver your question in person, or you can SMS it through and it'll come up on the screen here. So please go ahead and start getting your questions through. We've got about, I think we've got about 5 or 10 minutes for questions, so we can hopefully get through a few. One sort of question from me to kick it off. Genevieve, so you mentioned R and Python as languages, and I think most of us, through our education and work training have learned SAS quite well and are quite familiar with it, but R and Python are quite different and are probably emerging more so in recent years, so we might not have experience with it. How long would it take for someone to learn one of those languages, and what are the kind of pain points and challenges in doing so?
Well, speaking from my own experience, I started to learn Python about 18 months ago. I was able to learn the basics of Python in the space of a weekend. So that was the Queen's birthday long weekend. That was by far no means that I was actually an expert in it, but I could actually do something at the end of that. I'd say it takes about 6 months to actually become at least a reasonable programmer in a particular language. And beyond that, I'd say now that I'm getting into my second year of working in Python, I think I'm actually starting to not just focus on how to do things in the language, but focus on how to optimize the way in which I program. So I'd say 6 to 12 months to actually be a reasonable programmer.
Right. And where would you start? So I guess there's often there's R and Python, and they're quite different but do similar things.
Yep.
Which, from your experience, is more sort of beneficial to the sort of work that you do or that we do?
I would say R. R's good for doing statistical analysis. Python's good for writing software.
Right.
So I'd say on a day-to-day basis, you'd probably get more use out of R than out of Python.
Right, okay. And what about for the senior actuaries amongst the group who, for perhaps them learning R and Python and machine learning is something that time doesn't allow, but perhaps there are opportunities for their teams to leverage those techniques.
Yep.
What would be your advice to them in bringing in that skill set and upskilling the team to leverage those packages?
Well, I think it's a matter of giving the staff time in order to learn them. Whereas with SAS, there are a lot of very good training courses that you can send your staff on. I'm not really aware of any such such training courses in R or Python,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of really good material on the internet for learning those things. So what I'd recommend for people who employ actuaries is give your staff the time to actually work on some of those training practices, training programs at work, maybe
right.
an hour every day for a couple of weeks until
right.
they can get familiar.
Okay, and is that something that have you seen organisations doing that so far?
I've done it with my team.
Right.
So it's something that we've done in some of the lighter periods of the year. So over Christmas, say, we might have a team member who decides to work through some sort of online program, just, you know, a couple of hours each day.
Right. Okay. I might throw over to the audience for questions if people want to come up. It looks like the SMS functionality is not quite working. So if you want to come up to the mic, please. Yeah.
How do you handle situations where you get really big data sets? And I'm just saying, do you have any situations where, say, with your R programming, it's just not hasn't got enough computing power to deal with the types of problems you're encountering? Do you have any of those situations?
That's when you want to leverage multiple computer programs. R has historically been not as good at dealing with big data sets as some other programs like SAS. If you're talking about large data sets, then you could potentially do some of your data manipulation in SAS and then farm it out to R or Python once you've got it formatted. If you're talking the really, really big data sets, then you're probably going to be looking at getting cloud computing time using something like Amazon Web Services.
Thank you.
Thank you, Genevieve. That was a very interesting presentation. Elaine Collins, I'm interested in what are kind of the three best analyses that your data scientists have done for VMI, for example, that have been really, really useful in producing the strategy going forward?
Okay. As I said, my data scientist has only just started in September of this year, so she hasn't actually done that many pieces of work yet. Mm-hmm. But the piece of work that she's currently working on is what we call a risk-based approach. As VMIA, the biggest part of our portfolio is the medical indemnity portfolio. So what she's basically trying to come up with is a set of red flags that will help us identify hospitals that are showing early warning signs that they could potentially be a hotspot for claim events. Yeah. And that's something that has only just recently been completed, so we haven't actually rolled that out to going to clients. Yeah. But that's something we're hoping will help us to focus our resources on the hospitals where we have the best chance of catching claims before they happen.
Thank you.
Another one? Yeah, go ahead.
Another question. What types of, or how do you, for example, what would be your level of predictability, say, for example, your R-squared statistic, or what types of R-squareds do you get, and what algorithms do you find work best?
Well, when you're doing predictive modelling, I'm a big fan of ensemble learners. So an ensemble learner is one where you can combine multiple models, and you're basically taking an average of all of those models in order to get an end result which is more effective than the individual models. So I've found recently I've been doing a project through my own studies where we're looking at how you can make a decision tree more effective by basically taking half a dozen or more different decision trees and just averaging all their results. And that results in very strong predicting power.
Thank you.
Got time for a couple more questions. Jenny?
Thank you, Jenny Lyon. Thanks, Genevieve. I thought it was a really practical and interesting presentation. I just had a couple of comments. You asked about MOOCs on your resume. I think absolutely right in terms of demonstrating interest, and I think one of the things the Data Analytics Working Group for the Institute is trying to do is encourage people to go out there and do some of this learning on their own and recognise that it's not all going to be included in the actuarial course at this point, but hopefully as people are coming through our new graduates, they will get some more in terms of machine learning and programming. I thought your comments about working as a team of different people, both actuaries and data scientists, was interesting and built on what we heard this morning about diversity and collaborating with people from different practice areas and different backgrounds was great. And what I really wanted to ask you was, what you think, you've got actuaries and data scientists, what is the real value that the actuarial training brings in terms of where we can position ourselves moving forward, working with others, but, you know, using our actuarial skills? Thank you.
Okay. Comparing our data scientists to our actuaries, our data scientist is very, very strong in statistical techniques. However, she isn't so strong in just the theoretical underpinnings of actuarial science. So she's not familiar with valuation techniques. She's not strong on reading actuarial reports and in and she's not just a natural at understanding claims trends and the like. So what we've found is that if we put her together with one of our actuaries, then the actuary can provide that domain knowledge for the insurance industry, and then by them working together, and the actuary may be providing input on, you know, this is how actuaries price products, then they can together come up with an end product that's statistically strong but also has that theoretical actuarial underpinning.
Okay, I think we've got time for one more question.
Thomas Cherian, Mr. Probably a left field question. Given the pace of change and, you know, just the amount of stuff that's happened in the last sort of 10, 15 years and the way it's headed, is there a risk that data scientists would code themselves out of work eventually and you'll have automated systems and tools that effectively replace what the humans actually bring?
Yes, there is that risk, but someone's still got to code those tools up. So if you're capable of coding and working in that computer science type area, then you're probably better placed than someone who isn't.
All right. Please join me in thanking Genevieve for a very informative session.